Hello and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast. This is Mark Williams broadcasting to you from sunny Cambridgeshire in the UK. My guest today is Aoife O'Leary, the CEO of Opportunity Green. Aoife is a lawyer and economist who's been working on climate change for many years and has just started her own organisation to continue that journey. Opportunity Green wants to help to decarbonise shipping by identifying and unlocking the economic opportunities from tackling climate change. Opportunity Green will focus not just on shipping, but on other international transport sectors like aviation, and will also look more broadly at higher level governance issues such as legal challenges and opportunities and transparency of decision making. So Aoife, thanks very much for joining us today and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Delighted to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on. And always exciting, as a veteran of three startups now, always exciting to have something from Startup Land on the show. So please tell us about your new venture.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, it's called Opportunity Green. And we're really working with governments and also other NGOs and business to unlock the opportunities from decarbonisation. For the past 4 years, I've been head of the shipping team at the Environmental Defence Fund, where we worked to decarbonise aviation. We worked to decarbonise shipping. But I have also a background in working on aviation, so I really wanted to bring the two of them together. And also being a lawyer and economist, I have a lot of legal training that I wanted to bring to bear. There's a huge amount to be done in climate change. And sadly, even though I've mostly focused my career on it to date, I haven't solved it yet. So I will continue on, hopefully becoming more effective. Let's see how it goes. But the whole idea behind Opportunity Green is really when we talk about climate change, we often focus on the downsides. And there are a lot of downsides, obviously. We don't want 3, 4, 5 degrees of climate change. We want to stop that. But if you look at a world where we have stopped climate change, there's huge benefits. There's economic benefits. There's increased democracy. There's a much better life in terms of air pollution and other things like that that we don't talk about enough and we don't focus on. And these are often just kind of co-benefits or side benefits, we call them, of the decarbonisation journey. But I really believe that if we focus on those and help people to understand those benefits, we will actually decarbonise much faster. And also with the buy-in of the citizens that we need, you know, we together might say, oh yeah, we definitely need to do a lot more on climate change. But unless we get the buy-in of society generally, that's not going to happen. So that's where Opportunity Green is going to find its niche and hopefully unlock some of that blockage that we have at the moment.
So this is, it's not just commercial benefits or economic benefits. You're taking a holistic view.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the non-commercial benefits, the societal benefits, in many ways, I think, flow and unlock other commercial benefits. But I don't know that you can do one without the other. So to focus in on the shipping example, what we have at the moment is a industry that's fueled by fossil fuels, and we will ultimately need to move to different fuels and also more wind, more efficiency, etc. But in doing that, we're going to need a huge amount of regulation to get there. And there's no way you're going to get that regulation unless you also have transparency in the decision making. And you'll need transparency in the industry in terms of the emissions and also in terms of the solutions that go in place. And all of that actually brings a huge amount of increased democracy and participation of all kinds of different sectors of society that we weren't looking at before, that will hopefully understand the economic benefits that will come in terms of investment into developing countries for zero emission fuel build out. But also then the benefits from decreased air pollution and other, I guess, side benefits, I would say, as well, where we look at how shipping fits within kind of the world that is decarbonized. And we think about our consumption patterns and how we just want our society to be structured in the future.
Yeah, I think when I was growing up, I grew up within sight of the docks at Liverpool. And had chest infections every year as a kid. confessional moment here, and then ran away to university when I was 18 and to a nice bucolic part of the country. And suddenly my health improved enormously because I was probably in much cleaner air. And so, you know, the SOx and NOx emissions reduction program under MARPOL was something I could personally see huge benefits to public health from. And it's interesting the way that the emphasis on maritime pollution has gone away from pollution into the sea, from oil spills and the like, to pollution of the atmosphere. So, you know, first SOx and NOx were tackled, and now we're moving on to carbon dioxide. So there is this increasing emphasis, but it comes with huge public health benefits and societal benefits. And we have to find the commercial benefits of doing the same.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, your example is so pertinent. We don't count the benefits to people like you from reducing that air pollution, right? That's just kind of a side, I would say, benefit that we get. And that's the very discussion that's going on in the International Maritime Organization at the moment on climate, where they're talking about impact assessments for climate measures. And there's a whole group of countries that say, no, you can't actually look at the benefits. You can only look at the negative, which does actually kind of blow my mind a little bit. And we do need to be careful, because for countries that are less economically developed, if you put a price on shipping and increase the cost of trade, essentially, you could harm them. But at the same time, you know, we're all sitting here with historically high freight rates, and the cost of trade in many places and on many routes is, you know, triple, quadruple, whatever the time that it was this time last year or before that. So I don't think we can stop progress on that basis. But if you only look at the negative, it will, of course, you know, your balance sheet will only be negative. But there's a huge amount on the positive side that we don't look at. And also, I would say this is another failing I think we've had in shipping, is that we do sometimes look at air pollution over here and then we look at climate over there, and we don't necessarily look at them in that holistic way that we've just mentioned, right? And really kind of go, okay, but is this a solution that is also good for the climate? Is this a solution that is also good for air pollution? And there's no perfect solution quite often. You know, you will have to make some trade-offs, but to make sure that we are actually looking at that in a holistic way and not just moving from one type of pollution to another, or moving the pollution from one area to another, which is definitely something that has been an issue before.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more. But I guess the question for us working in startup land, as we both do, is how can startups move this agenda along faster or better than the big corporates can? If, you know, we just think about all the different corporations, societies, associations, joint ventures, and so on that have been announced over the last few years. It's an astonishing amount of hot air being generated by these huge corporates. How are us little startups likely to make our voices heard in all that cacophony?
Yeah, well, I mean, as you said, you're a veteran of three startups, so maybe I should be asking you for your best advice on that. But I guess from my perspective, I think one of the things is we're just more nimble and look the world in a different way. I mean, I definitely felt Opportunity Green is going to fill this niche that we need that isn't being filled at the moment. And I think that's just where we are with the climate crisis and everything. We need everyone to kind of plug in and do everything. And so corporates just aren't necessarily as flexible and kind of get stuck in the mud. And like, as you said yourself, you know, when they look at this, quite often what their reaction is to set up something new themselves. So I'm thinking of the Maersk McKinney Muller Center for Zero Carbon Shipping. Similarly, the Getting to Zero Coalition from the Global Maritime Forum. Like, if you look at the names that are involved, they're very much big corporates. Now, there are some smaller startups in there, but mostly it's the big shipping corporates that have been around a long time. Why did they feel the need to do these startups themselves to get it done? And I think one of the things is we've never faced challenges like this before. So we really need to be thinking outside the box and coming at it from new angles. And I think it's also just a really important to think about, because I guess I focus mostly on the regulation and I'm very involved in the International Maritime Organization. And that body itself, I mean, if you wanted to talk about a bit of a I mean, corporate is the wrong word, but it's long established and has some very established processes and formalities. And, you know, there's a big question there about whether it's fit for purpose if we are looking at shipping and climate change. That is something that Opportunity Green really wants to focus in on. Mm. Look at the transparency in the IMO, look at the processes, ask ourselves, is this really the entity that is going to decarbonize shipping? Because shipping is going to decarbonize, and there's just a question about whether it's done with or through the IMO or whether it's done outside it.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, I was going to ask you about COP26, but and whether maritime's going to have its voice heard at COP26. But actually, I think it's worth also asking: do you know if the IMO is going to be represented at COP26?
Yeah, I mean, the UN bodies generally send someone, and they have a what is called substa, which is one of the kind of like a sub meeting within COP, and they discuss where the IMO is on shipping and where ICAO, which is the International Civil Aviation Organization, is on aviation. But really interestingly, 2 weeks ago, Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, called out both aviation and shipping and said, you guys, you're on a path to 3 degrees of warming, you know, pull up your socks, a lot more to do here. I think we'll get the same message from COP26, which is brilliant. And definitely the shipping industry needs to be told to do more. And the countries that are represented in the IMO need to do more and need a bigger sense of urgency. But the thing that I always, I guess, worry about with a COP is that it's a very high level event, and you have these very high level statements, and there's brilliant high level goals and statements from a number of countries. But then I see their representatives in the IMO, and what they're saying does not match those high level goals. So to me, I'm less interested, I guess, in shipping getting its voice heard in COP so much as what that actually means. Like, what is the translation into regulation, into policy, into day to day? You know, yes, we need high level, brilliant, wonderful goals out to 2050 and interim ones, but I want to know how we're going to meet them.
Yeah, yeah. Let's have a think if we can just between us now bash our heads together and say, okay, well, there's got to be some opportunities in shipping's energy transition. So let's see if we can think of three, and three practical things that could happen by 2030. I mean, you could have people investing in non-fuel tech like wind-assisted power,
yes,
or solar power for auxiliary engines, both of which could save 10 to 20% on fuel costs.
Yeah,
combined, you know, so that's something that someone could do immediately.
Yeah. And I mean, the investment there is absolutely vital, because I think one of the things that we are facing at the moment as well, partially, I think, due to the lack of regulation, is kind of a gulf in investment. So there's investment through governments into R&D and especially in universities and things like that, where they tinker away in a lab. And then once something's been proven, there are venture capitalists who will scale it and, you know, kind of take ownership and get all the money from it. But there's this gulf in between, which I think is where we really are right now with climate. And I would say wind, unfortunately, is falling into that. And also like wider opportunities at sea, like marine and tidal energy that we really need to use. We know that there's a lot of concepts that are brilliant, but we're not seeing them at scale and we're not seeing them deployed. I mean, I would hope regulation would unlock that. But I would also say, you know, if we're looking at to any investors who are listening and looking for concrete investments in shipping and the energy transition, I would say that is the space, the gap that they could have the most influence and the most impact.
Yeah, I quite agree. I think we're in what the German wind industry calls the Dunkelflaute at the moment. The Dunkelflaute are those sort of gloomy, windless days that you get where there's no sunshine because you have 8/8 cloud cover.
Right.
And there's no wind, so the wind turbines don't turn. So you generate no renewable electricity, you know, and you have to turn the coal-fired power back on.
Right.
So we seem to be in the Dunkelflaute now between ideas and action.
Yes.
And we need that element of investment to step into the industry and go, okay, well, here are 5 ideas. We're going to pick 3, put some money into them, and see which ones work.
Absolutely. I'm going to adopt that as my new word of the month or year as well. So,
Yeah, I didn't coin it. It comes from the power and generation industry, but it's a good
It's
word,
a great word.
Uncle Flauta. So if the investors come along, then there are things they can invest in. You know, you've got things like wind power. I mean, I often talk to people about the possibilities of power to X. So using floating wave, wind and solar power to generate hydrogen as energy storage and then deliver energy to passing vessels. Well, you've got the whole liquefied hydrogen tanker industry, which is yet to start. You know, the first liquefied hydrogen tanker is sailing now, and there's a long-term agreement between Japan and Australia for Japan to import liquid hydrogen from Australia. And I guess, you know, that's kind of where the LNG industry was 60 years ago when the first cargoes came out of, I think it was actually Brunei that had the first LNG cargo exports on a Shell tanker. So, and now there are more LNG carriers than there are VLCCs on the water. So, you know, things change over time. So I think there's that to look forward to as well. But what kind of other things can you see in your work?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing to me about opportunities and decarbonizing shipping are those developing countries around the world that have that huge renewable potential and are realizing that if they put regulations on shipping, that investment will flow into their countries. Especially if we talk about a carbon price on shipping and you use that money to actually decarbonize the sector. It's incredible to me how much opportunity there is out there. We have, and again, this is the thing where we know what the technologies are. It's more just that we need to deploy them. And as you say, you know, we are kind of in this weird in-between space at the moment. We know we need to do it. We know we need to do it soon. And yet it's not happening. So I would say as well, definitely for energy investors or just investors in general in climate change, etc., they have a huge part to play. But at the same time, if we don't get the regulations in place, then I think they're only ever going to be a small part. You're only ever going to have like first movers and, you know, one or two projects here or there. If we are going to do it on the scale we need, then that's going to require the regulation. And that regulation, I think, is the huge opportunity. And we do see that from a number of countries in the International Maritime Organization that are figuring that out and coming there and looking for it. But at the same time, so much more to do. And I would also call out, I'd say, some of our more developed countries who have great domestic targets and quite a lot of domestic legislation and are still kind of going, well, we need to assess the options and we're not sure. You know, we do know how to do a good carbon regulation. We've been doing carbon regulations for 30 years in different sectors. And you draw the parallel with LNG, and there I would say, you know, not great. Unfortunately, if you look at the methane from LNG, the CO2 is reduced for sure compared to standard oil used in ships, but the methane, it turns into a whole other ballgame. And that's something that, again, coming back to this idea of looking at things holistically, that we didn't necessarily do with LNG, and I think that's a missed opportunity. But that's what we need to do going forward, that real holistic kind of looking at where it is. And maybe, so to me, a better comparison for where shipping is on its decarbonisation journey is the wind or the solar sector 20 years ago, where we had the technology for giant wind farms, but they weren't getting built. And so what governments did was they put a carbon price, you know, this little line in your electricity bill, and created a pot of money to subsidize those first large-scale wind farms. And then over time, because investors were getting the return that they needed, they just became cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And in fact, it's quite amazing if you look back at the projections, nobody thought they'd be as cheap as they are today. By now, we just absolutely smashed all of those predictions for how much it would cost. So, you know, because I'm an optimist, I'm hoping we can do the same in shipping with whether it's hydrogen or ammonia or whatever, that once we get the investment going, start to see some actual large scale investment in this, that those costs will come right down and it will just become normal in the shipping industry. And that will just be where it is. And we can really start to, you know, move on from this crisis. And I think we can do it quickly. But we do just have to have the political will and the determination to seize on the opportunities that are sitting there waiting for us.
I want to come back to something you said earlier, talking about, we talked about the IMO. You mentioned some of the large economies. Of course, the European Union is bringing
Yes.
Shipping into its emission trading scheme. But you also mentioned, what excites you is being able to work with developing economies and countries in developing and emerging markets. Is there an organization there? Is there a talking group? Is there a convention that the outside of the IMO, where the emerging markets can do something like the European Union has done and said, okay, as a group of countries, we're going to institute this regulation now, and you have to adhere to it, or you can't visit.
There is not at the moment, I mean, not on the scale of the European Union where they could actually all agree on a regulation together. There's definitely a number of different associations where the governments come together and talk about different topics and everything. But that's a really good point that, to be honest, I haven't really thought about in terms of shipping. So I know that they're trying to coordinate when they come into the IMO and discuss shipping. But there's also, there's kind of another layer, and I think this comes back to some of what I was talking about with regards to democracy earlier. There are 172 members in the IMO, but on any one day for any one meeting, very few of them really turn up. And that's because just in terms of capacity, a lot of countries just don't have the people in London. We've been hearing, about the Pacific Islands and how difficult it is for them to send some representatives to COP26, for example. It's similar for the IMO. And even though things are online, still just having countries who can get up to speed quickly and get involved and understand everything, it's quite a heavy lift. So that is definitely something I'm excited about working with and hopefully being able to bring some of those countries along and help them understand what's going on and get involved. Because we have a huge amount of countries in the COP process that are really climate ambitious and they're just not represented in the IMO at the moment, just mainly down to capacity reasons. So that's something that I think we need to look at as well. Is the IMO really representative of the countries that, rely on shipping? And if it's not, why not? And what can we do about that?
Well, I think there's plenty for the IMO to do about its process as an organisation, and we're not really in the business of kicking at the IMO, but on these podcasts. But I think, yeah, its challenges are well publicised, not least by itself.
So I'm not in the business of bashing the IMO either. And obviously, some of what I've said today might sound like it. But the IMO as an organization is what it is because of the countries that come together and agree its regulations. So we often talk about the IMO as too slow or whatever, but just to give a shout out, I guess, to the IMO secretariat, who do a really good job, I would say, within quite a lot of constraints. But it's really when we talk about the IMO, what we're really talking about are the countries that form the IMO. So just to be, I guess, clear on that it's really those countries that I'm bashing.
I think we've said before on the podcast, we have to remember the IMO is a it's like a parliament. It
Yes.
does it, you know it, it sets it's the conventions are agreed at the IMO, but it's up to the individual countries to monitor and police them.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, Aoife, it's been lovely having you on the show. Thank you very much for coming on and telling us about Opportunity Green and the work you've been doing. And we look forward to hearing about the opportunities that develop and how you contribute, especially on the regulatory side. And we'd better get calling all of these emerging markets and developing countries and put their association for decarbonising shipping together.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks so much for having me, Mark, and it's been great.
Good to have you on. And thank you to everyone out there in podcast land. And we'll see you again soon for another Ship Energy podcast. This is Mark Williams signing off for now. Bye from Cambridgeshire.